You are now checked in to Stand Up New York Labs. Oh, yeah.
Hello and welcome to the TFM podcast. This is J Train, Jared Freed, coming to you live from New York City's Upper West Side, Stand Up New York Labs. We're here every Tuesday with your emails, your stories, your questions. Guys, keep sending those emails. It's amazing. We got over 50 this week. That's unbelievable to me. So thank you for sending those in. It's tfmpodcast@gmail.com. tfmpodcast@gmail.com. We tape this every Tuesday for you at Stand Up New York Labs. Go support this club. They're very good to us here. Go to standupny.com. Use the promo code TFM, and you can get free tickets to any show that's here at the club. I'd love to see you here. If you're here over the holidays in New York City, that'd be great. Let's get to this week's guest. I'm very excited. This is a very special guest this week. Barry Katz. Barry, thank you so much for coming on.
No worries. My pleasure. You know, it's fascinating hearing you talk on the podcast. You know, for your audience, you should know this. You know, when he gets on the phone with me, he's like, hey, Barry, we're going to do the podcast. We're going to answer a few questions. If you don't mind, we'll get this done and we'll put it together. Is a half hour okay? I'm like, no, we can do more than a half hour. Okay, I'm just going to start this thing off. You'll know when I'm coming on. Hey, this is Jared Free, the TFN podcast.
I try to bring a lot of energy, man.
It's like, holy Moses, man. It's like, I feel like AM radio lives.
That's what it is. Listen, I've listened to enough slow, drawn-out podcasts to know that after the first minute.
Which is you're describing my podcast.
That's what I want to talk about first. I'm a huge fan. So for those of you that don't know this, I am a huge Barry Katz fan. As a young comedian, I've known about you and the things that you've been involved with and the people that you've represented. If you don't know at home, Barry has launched the careers of Dave Chappelle, Dane Cook, Anthony Clark, Nick Swartzen, Tracy Morgan, Nick DiPaolo, Daryl Hammond, Whitney Cummings, Jay Moore, Louis C.K. Did I miss anybody, Barry?
A bunch of hacks.
Okay. And then some people that didn't make it so much. Those are the good ones. We'll talk about those. But I mean, that, and you've been involved in everything, 30 different TV specials and stand-up specials. You're one of the people that's involved with Whitney. You're an executive producer of that show. So you have you're big time, you know, if that's okay for me to say.
Yes, basically, if I were homeless, my box would be slightly bigger than the next homeless person, which I am homeless, probably.
Well, that's okay. I have no box at all, so I'm willing to look up to your box. But you have a podcast that I am a huge fan of called Industry Standard. If you could explain it to the audience so that they can subscribe to your podcast, how would you explain it? You know, a 2-sentence description.
Oh well, basically. I don't know if I could do it in 2 sentences because I'm pretty long-winded.
Take what you need.
How it originated was the fact that I used to take meetings with network presidents and studio heads and showrunners. And I'd get done with the meeting, it'd be an hour and a half later, and I'd go into my car, and I'd be driving, and I couldn't believe that I was the only person in that room
getting those amazing
hearing
stories,
all these amazing things and stories and unique advice. And so I decided that I wanted to do something in my spare time which could help people, because what happens is when you're a manager and you do something great with an artist's talent and your talent, it truly is amazing. But the thing is, you go home as a manager and you realize, I only helped one person.
I got it.
And I wanted to do more, and if I could do that in the spare time that I had, I thought it'd be a great idea. And like any artist, you start something off, and there's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a risk. You go for it. There's no managers doing it. There's no producers doing it. And people are telling you don't do it because it'll hurt you, or it'll do this, or people will get upset at you. And then you start and you realize that there's no one, there's no one. Your first thing you put out, there's nothing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever it is, a year and a half later, or there's 3 million people who have downloaded podcast you're on, and you just can't, you can't even conceive of it. And then the letters and the emails that I've gotten, and what it is for everybody out there, it's just, it's meant as a tool for you to help you get to the next level by listening to the people who are in the business and showing how they started from their humble beginnings and how they got to where they are and the setbacks that they had and how they triumphed.
Yeah, I think what's cool about it for me is that you hear that everyone started with nothing. There's nobody out there that started at the top. And, you know, all the people that you talk to some huge guests. And everyone has their own story that, you know, is similar in the fact that it came from somewhere to now, you know, start, you know, came from the bottom to the top, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, the best, I as a fan of your podcast, I will say that you should all go check it out on iTunes, Industry Standard. You can find Barry on Twitter, at Barry Katz with a Z. The best thing to me, and I one of my favorite things are the intros. If you listen to each episode, has an intro where, you know, Barry gives a piece of advice that based on the episode. And those are always fun to hear because it's a just a little slice of perspective after having you do those after you've taped it, right?
No, no. I sit down with the guest and I actually just look them in the eye and then just something comes to me. And
you always have a story for everybody.
The positive of it is that I think it gets to a point where it really does make sense and it does help people through my experiences and the 6 degrees of separation with the guests. The negative is sometimes they seem very long and I don't know what happens, but I end up getting done with it and literally my guest is prone falling asleep on the couch and I have to just wake them up to do the rest of the podcast.
I do enjoy them though. It's always a nice little, you know, inside baseball story about you and the guest, and it does feel like you're giving, you know, where the episode will go that day, and it, you know, gives a little bit of advice and, you know, some life management, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, Barry, so excited to have you on. We got some emails that in this episode for the listeners at home, it's going to be a little different. These are more career oriented, and then we'll get to some of the wild emails toward the end that we usually do with some, you know, fraternity college advice. Barry, you went to college?
Yes, I did. I went to Boston University.
BU. Okay, from my hometown.
I graduated most likely to have a podcast.
Yeah. So you did well in school. Me and you both.
Well,
well,
I tried.
Before we get started, I'm going to give some Snapchat shout-outs. I love doing Snapchat. I am JTrain56 on Snapchat. This is just a couple of shout-outs before we get started. My fraternity brothers listen to you all the time. Keep up the shit. It's amazing. Also, send me a Snap shout-out. At SirWilliam24. Thank you, buddy, for listening. That's a shout-out for you. Another one, what's up, Jew Train? I snapped you about the shout-out earlier today. I just want to say thanks for the podcast. I only started listening a few months ago, but I've gone in and listened to a lot of the older ones when I'm driving and shit. Keep up the good work, fam. And it's KW_VASILIS. That's a Snapchat. Another one, Dylan Ledman Snapchat. And then the last one, hey, J-Train, give me a shout-out. My old Snap got hacked, so I have a new one with a weak-ass score. It's disgusting. Anyways, add me. And it's BR0NTEB, Bronte B with a zero instead of the O. Same username on Twitter. Hit me up on that, too. Love the podcast. Thank you. Okay, those are some shout-outs. And let's get to the emails. You ready, Barry?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. Okay. This one's called "This Dick Ain't Sucking Itself." That's something. what a start out with our guest. Hey, J Queer. Instead of doing a nosedive straight for your asshole, I'm going to jump right into my questions for this so-called career guy. I asked for, you know, career advice. You have on with you today. Just kidding. I heard he's aight. J Queer. I think you'll have some answers to this question as well. He writes, how do I get about networking with my alumni and my fraternity without sounding like an ungrateful asshole? A question for career guy when applying to different jobs, what are things that I should keep on my resume no matter what job I'm applying to? And what things should I change based on the company? JQueer, I'm sorry that every time you ask Grandpa for $50, you get shortchanged and only get $40. Add me on Snap. His name is Bitch on Pave. Maybe I'll send you some extra quiche every time you get shortchanged by your stingy-ass family. I think that's a Jewish comment. So, Barry, what do you think? What's the best thing that you see on a resume?
You know, you're going to laugh about this. I never have read a resume.
You've never read a resume?
What is good? I don't like resumes. I don't want anything to do with a resume.
What don't you like about a resume?
Just because it's all you. Who's going to check a resume? Who cares? You know, anybody can write any resume they want, and who's going to check it? And who's going to take the time to check it when they're looking at 25 or 30 or 50 resumes? I want to see the cover letter that they write me.
That's more important to you.
What kind of personality and humor it has in it. And then, because that's going to get them in the door. And then when they get in the door, then I'll meet them, and then I'll know what they're like as a person. I don't really believe in resumes. I know it's crazy.
No, but
I know you have to do them, but I mean, it's just when it comes to the resume, you don't worry about what's on it or what's not on it, because that's what you are. That's what it is. So you put it together. Some people cheat. They put things on that don't mean anything that they've never done.
But
it's about how I get somebody's attention and how, when I sit down across from them, I'm undeniable.
What's the best thing that someone's done to get your attention?
I always say this in the podcast, and I know it sounds weird, but there isn't anyone in the history of the world that doesn't open a FedEx. And so now, if you're in a particular town where you need to apply for a job, let's say you're somebody living in Los Angeles or in New York, and your job that you're looking for is in New York, it's very simple. All you do is go down to the FedEx store and take a bunch of envelopes and a bunch of mailing labels, and you make out mailing labels, FedEx labels, and you rip off the front thing, you put it in, and you hand deliver it yourself to the company.
And that
your
costs you zero.
The FedEx envelope, and it costs you zero.
Yeah.
And everyone always opens it. And you put your letter together that's interesting and humorous, but also lets people know who you are as a person and what you're willing to do, and if you could just take 5 minutes to meet with the person. And normally that always works.
Well, I think that's interesting advice. And in the day of email, when, you know, you have a million emails a day, you know, how many times do you forget to get back to somebody or just glaze over things, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I'm just talking about me. I'm one person. I don't know what anybody else does, but that's me.
But the point of everyone opens a FedEx, there's never been a time that I've just thrown a FedEx aside and said I won't open it right this minute and care about what's inside. You're right.
Well, anytime I can hear somebody who's a podcast host say that I'm right, that makes up for all the times that women have said that I'm wrong.
Well, listen, what do you think about networking events? Do you ever go back to BU ever go back to the old school and, you know, go back and shake hands with some of the students?
I don't really, I know this sounds odd.
But this is what we want to hear. You're dealing with people sending you things and wanting to get through your door. So people want to hear what other, you know, what comes, you know, what makes you stop and say yes instead of a no.
I mean, if you need to go to an event to network in these days and times, then I think we all need to reevaluate our lives. I mean, the fact is you can reach anybody you want anywhere. Now, granted, if there's an event and you know there's somebody who's going to be there, or a couple of people from different factions that are going to be there, that you can't reach through social networking or an email address, and you just want to get face-to-face to it, obviously. But for the most part, I really don't see it. Everybody's accessible. You can reach anybody you want. and they'll listen and they'll read.
Yeah, I mean, I heard you once say that you know, that you get like 8,600 emails. Is that true? You know, didn't you say that once on a podcast?
I have. Let's look here. I'm curious myself.
Okay.
Let me look at my email box right now. 12,534.
That's insane.
So it's kind of a little bit crazy, but eventually I'll respond to everything.
Well, then that's an interesting thing from my point of view, because then why get back to me?
I got back to you. I'll tell you why I get back to you.
I would love to hear that.
Permission to speak freely?
Please, this is you're on TFM. Somebody just called me a J-queer.
Well, that's politically correct.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just, it's so fun. I want to answer that, your question. I just want to share something with you. I was at this taping of Comics Unleashed, and one of my clients, Brad Williams, who happens to be about 3 feet tall,
I know him.
Says, you know, you talk about political correctness. He says that he had a show once where 21 little people picketed his show.
Yeah.
And they came there holding signs. Well, he said actually they came there holding index cards, but they were at the show, and the main leader comes up to him and says, excuse me, I just have to tell you, you used the word midget, and that's offensive to us. We're little people.
They're saying this too for the audience at home, a little person.
And we don't really appreciate you using the M word, because the M word is equivalent in our minds to the N word for African Americans. And Brad says he stood up to the guy, looked him right in the eyes, and said, "Midget, please." and so
fantastic.
Your Q word got me there.
Yeah.
But why did I do this podcast for you?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I haven't really figured out a way to unsubscribe to your daily emails that come to me. So that's one reason I'm not technologically savvy enough. The persistence in those emails.
Well, let me correct you first. They're bi-weekly. I have you in my calendar.
Whatever they are, they are the most annoying fucking things in the world. Hi, my name is Jared Freed, and we've sold 6,024 new screenplays today.
Yes.
Today, this hour, we've actually sold, we are tallying screenplays that we sold here at our company. It's like the Jerry Lewis Telethon. It just changes every minute here. And we want to let you know how many people are so successful by using our service. And Barry, please recognize. And I just, you know, you get these things over and over again. And after like about, you know, maybe a month, you just want to buy a handgun, but you can't. So the reason I thought maybe if I do this podcast, maybe he'd unsubscribe me.
Well, I believe in something called being pleasantly persistent. And I think to the people at home, you know, I have a brother who wanted to work. He would tell everyone he could. He wanted to be a commissioner of the NFL. He wanted to be a GM, a general manager. And I said to him, there's 32 of them in the world. And he sent emails. You know, he would send an email here and there. And, you know, I said, what are you doing? Put it in your calendar for 2 weeks from now. People don't respond. I have a belief that people don't respond to your first email. They respond to your third email, as long as you're nice and respectful. And I believe that I was trying to do that with you. I hope I didn't. At least you didn't reach for the handgun. That's what I'm excited we got you here first before that happened.
No, I'm just talking. But persistence is fast. As a matter of fact, he had one set up with me, and I actually didn't make it, which I felt horrible about.
It was no problem.
In the studio at Stand Up New York. I want to tell you something unrelated to your questions here.
Sure.
Because I think it'll be interesting to your audience.
Go for it.
Stand Up New York has a big history in my heart, because the original owners of Stand Up New York, Carrie Hoffman and the late Suzanne Hoffman, they reached out to me. I was in Boston running a comedy club called Play It Again Sam's, and they said they wanted to come and see talent.
Mm.
And they came down. He came down. I don't know if she came down. And he saw like about 20 different stand-up comedians on one night I put on, including Bob Goldthwait and a number of different huge comics at the time. Because he was doing this new innovative kind of thing where he was going to book four comics and pay them $50 a show for eight shows, so $400 each. I believe that's what it was.
Yeah.
And they would all be equal. And so I tried to convince him to book somebody, but he didn't. So his first show, fascinatingly enough,
this was in Boston.
This is the first show at Stand Up New York. The opening act was Mario Cantone.
Okay.
You might know him from Sex and the City.
Yes.
The middle act was Rosie O'Donnell.
Might have heard of her.
And the closing act was the National Association of Campus Activities Entertainer of the Year, Tim Cetimi. Now, Tim was an act that was like a lot of college acts back then. They were more entertainers. They were more novelty acts. They were a lot of them who were the most successful ones were part stand-up comic, part mime, part prop guy, part
jack of all trades.
Performer. And that was Tim. And I'll never forget this. The place was packed. And Kerry goes on. He introduces Mario Cantone, who I guess hosted the show as well. I don't know if he did or not, or maybe Kerry just brought up the acts. So Mario goes on. He's very entertaining. He's very high energy.
Mm-hmm.
Does a great job. He's very effeminate, and he kills. And it's a very ill crowd at this club. I never saw so many fur coats in my life.
Oh, wait. It's a very what crowd? You cut out a little
upscale.
Bit.
Upscale.
I gotcha.
Upscale.
Okay.
Rosie O'Donnell goes on. She does great. And then Tim Cetimi goes on, and he's on roller skates.
Okay.
Now you can imagine on roller skates going through this crowd that's packed, and the stage at Stand Up New York is the size of like a Ritz cracker.
Yes.
I mean, it's very small. It didn't have any room, and he was used to these big stages. And he's doing his novelty stuff, and the crowd starts talking.
Oh, no.
And if you've ever been to an event, when you're at a comedy club, when people don't like you, they don't talk as a group. They just shut you down, you bomb. Sometimes you get heckled. But when you're at an event, what happens is something very unique when you don't do well. People start talking. And you can hear talking throughout the room. They just start talking to each other. And it gets louder and louder and louder to where you just can't hear anything. It's a different kind of tune-off that is very rare and is only true of event kind of comedy. When I say event comedy, I'm talking about having a comedian at like a special event.
Yeah, so they turn off as a group, more or less.
Yes. And the show finishes, and I witness an argument in the back with Kerry Hoffman and Rosie O'Donnell's manager.
Okay.
And I leave. I go back to Boston, where I was from. And I get a call from Kerry saying that Rosie O'Donnell quit. Because he had changed the order. He had moved the next night. He had moved Rosie O'Donnell to close the shows and Tim Cetimi in the middle and Mario Cantone opening. Tim still bombed. On the Wednesday, he moved Tim Cetimi to open and Mario Cantone to go in the middle and then Rosie. And Tim still bombed. And then Rosie's manager said, hey, if you don't pay her more, we're pulling out. He wouldn't pay her more. They pulled out. So he called me to book somebody.
Mm.
And I booked one of the people that who passed away, actually, a really great comedian with great timing from Boston called Rich. His name was Rich Seisler.
Okay.
And he ended up closing the show is from, I believe, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I actually was indirectly involved in the first headliner that ever worked at Stand Up New York, and that's how that took place.
That's unbelievable. How many years ago was that? What year was that?
Well, I'm going to say that was in the 80s. It was somewhere in the 80s. So you tell me when Stand Up New York started. I believe they're celebrating their 30th anniversary soon, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the old sign that's up in the studio now. It's unbelievable how much history that there is here. And to hear that Roseanne Barr is doing, you know, opening for someone else is amazing.
Rosie O'Donnell.
Rosie O'Donnell. I'm sorry. Right? Rosie O'Donnell. You know, you think of these big mega people starting in a room like this, and it's a smaller room. You know, there's 110 people that can fit here.
Yeah, it was a very special place, very unique place. Carrie and Suzanne put their heart and soul into it, and I think that one of the things you find if you are an entrepreneur and you do want to go into the comedy club business, the places that work the best are the places where there's one person who it's their whole life.
Mm.
And for Carrie and Suzanne, it was their whole life. For Caroline Hirsch, there's no Carolines in Chicago or Poughkeepsie, New York.
Yeah.
Or it's just there's one Caroline's. And for her and Louis Ferranda and Andrew Fox there, it's they put all their effort into it for the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes
late,
your family.
The late Manny Dorman and now Esty is there. And it just, you know, you go down there, she's always there.
Mm.
And there's that thing. And those are the places that really, really do well. And I found my comedy club in New York went down the tubes after I started going to L.A. And even though it was there for 17 or 20 years, every time I've left some place, like when I had the club in Boston played against Sam's, I left and went to New York, and it just closed down in a year and a half. I left the Boston Comedy Club, and in less than a year, it closed down. It's just that's the way it is. It just needs that love and attention.
Do you think that's the case for most businesses? You know, when a kid getting out of college, he's thinking, what do I want to do? You know, would you say it's a better path to follow passion rather than maybe something that you're just okay about?
I think the biggest thing for anybody in anything they want to do, it sounds so simple, but if you outsmart everybody.
Can you repeat that? You just cut out on us a little bit.
If you outsmart everybody and outwork everybody, put in more time, and you do undeniable, extraordinary work, you can't lose. You really can't lose because America will tell you. Like, what? Look, there's a ton of there's 350 podcasts out there.
Yeah.
When I launched my podcast, I wasn't one of them. And then I was. And I'm saying this, and I don't mean this come across like I'm disingenuous here, because I really feel this way. I listen to the sound of my own voice, and I literally fall. But I obviously I'm not the audience.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just do something that would mean something to people, but there was always the chance that America would say, this sucks. this is awful.
Yeah.
And the thing about the artist listening, the great part about your business that you're in, assuming the majority of the people who listen to this are artists.
Well, I would assume that they're all going to be they're college entrepreneurial, you know, guys and girls that want to be successful.
Let's assume you're college entrepreneurial people who want to be successful.
Okay.
This is so simple. I mean, it's so simple, and it's hard to realize. But I'll tell you something. You have the greatest advantage in the world. Look, if you want to be a brain surgeon, you can, if you fuck up one time in your career, just one fuck up, one lapse for 1 second, you're done. It's over. Your career is over. You have no shot of working in this country ever again, let alone any other country.
Mm.
But if you're a young entrepreneur and you want to do something, particularly in the entertainment business, let's just pretend you want to be a writer or an actor or a comedian or a magician or whatever it is.
Mm.
You can fail 99 times in a row, and the 100th time you can do something special, and your whole life will change forever, and no one will give a shit about the 99 previous times you did.
You'll be known for one thing.
If you're somebody who puts things out on YouTube, and your first 99 things suck, they completely suck. I'm sorry, my phone is ringing.
Don't worry about it.
And the first 99 suck, and the 100th one is great. You remove the 99 that sucked from YouTube, and you just keep the one that's great, and you're golden.
Yeah,
it's like it's you have no look. I mean, look at the last. Whatever you call it now, you don't even call it an album, do you? Whatever you download digitally from an artist.
Okay.
You go on, you download it. There's 10 songs on there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's 12. Okay. Think about that. Let's just take any artist I'll take somebody who's been around for 30 years and stand up in the air. Let's take Madonna.
Okay.
When Madonna puts out an album, do you think Madonna thinks that all 12 songs are going to be hit songs? It's never happened in the history of the fucking world. It's never. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the Beatles or Dave Matthews or whatever, James Blunt or Lana Del Rey or whoever you are putting out. No one wins 100 times out of 100 times. There's always these failures.
Yeah.
And so you have to understand that's the way it is. So when you're applying to a job out there, the first thing that you need to do is just work on your personality as a person. And if you work on your personality as a person to be the kind of person that you would want in your life, think about it. If you're a woman or a man, young man listening to this, just visualize the kind of person that you would like in your life as a friend, as a partner, as a lover, whatever it is. Think about who that person is and the qualities of that person and just be that person.
Mm.
And there's no way that you're going to go. If I were to set any one of your listeners up with 20 interviews, are you trying to listening to this podcast, are you trying to say that anyone listening is going to go 0-for-20?
I mean,
it's literally impossible. So who gives a shit if 19 interviews blow?
Yeah.
All you need is one. And let's say 20 blow and you just can't get 20 jobs. Well, guess what? You just go out on another 20 interviews and no one knows. No one cares.
Well,
the guy or girl you interview with, who you're going to interview with after you've gone 0-for-20, does not know you went 0-for-20.
It's a key.
Just like the girl you're going out with or the guy you're going out with on the first date doesn't know that you fucked up the last 9 relationships.
It's a good point.
It's 0-0 every time. And that's the advantage of our business and what we're doing. And if you look at it that way, you can't fail. Yes, you can get the gig and fail. And the reason you get the gig and fail is because you don't do undeniable work. You don't do better. Because when you get in a job, when you finally get the job, and your audience should know this, when you finally get the job, you're not going to be in a situation where the people there who are working in around the same positions or levels as you want you to succeed. They don't want you to succeed. Mm. They might come up to you in the lunchroom and say, hey, how you doing, buddy? Good to see you. Hey, girl, how was your weekend?
Yeah.
They don't want you to go, they don't want you to pass them. They don't want you to get a promotion before them.
Well, I think that's,
so you got to figure out secretly how to navigate and win.
Especially when you come out of college, you've been, you know, getting, you know, you've been going for grades your whole life, and then there's a point where those grades stop coming to you. You know, and real life doesn't work like that in A, B, C, D. You know, there's just, you know, get the sale or don't, get the job or don't, move ahead or don't.
Exactly.
You know, and that's a tough thing, I think, for a lot of college graduates when they come out, the realization that life is not there for them and there will be no's. You know, understanding that there's going to be no's means, you know, that hopefully there comes a yes one day if you keep pushing at it.
You got to turn the no's into yeses.
This is an emailer, tfmpodcast@gmail.com. We're here with Barry Katz. Go check out Industry Standard, unbelievable podcast, very inspiring. Talk to some major, major people in Hollywood. But it's good for anything. It doesn't matter if you're looking to go into entertainment or not. This is called Future Filmmaker. Hey, I'm currently a freshman undergrad, and my major is biology. But I really want to become a filmmaker. I'm not majoring in film production because I'm afraid that it won't work out. So I have a backup plan of becoming a physician assistant. I plan on minoring in film production, and then for graduate school, I want to go to USC for the cinematic arts. I specifically want to go into making independent films and having my own production company. How would I go about doing this? That's from Shay. Thank you, Shay, for the email. Barry, what do you think for a guy that's in a major that maybe isn't for his, you know, for his passion?
Well, first of all, again, I feel bad saying this.
That's okay.
Majors mean nothing.
Coming from me, I'm happy you're saying that. Coming from me, that wouldn't sound, you know, how would I know? But you're, you know, a person that you go for it.
Do you think that I meet with anybody for a job and it's like, what was your major? Oh, I majored in liberal arts. Get the fuck out of my office.
Never happens. Unless
I just want to tell you what I did, you know. In my junior year, I took science instead of computers. Get out now.
Yeah.
Get out of my office. I, if you didn't take them, get out.
What do you...
Listen, I want to tell you, I was in the school of SMG at Boston University Business Management, and I switched my major to the fine arts. Oh, get out.
You know,
it's like nobody cares. Nobody
cares.
It's just like a fallacy of what it is. Do you think I look at somebody's like resume and say, oh, I graduated from this school versus that school? Yes, obviously, if somebody went to an Ivy League school versus somebody went to Ed's College,
yeah,
yes, it makes a difference. But then after that, I mean, who really cares? I mean, and also in the end, if I met with somebody who went to Quinnipiac College and came into my office and they had so much charisma and so much life and so much energy and so many great ideas, and then I met with somebody from Harvard who just was sort of like had no charisma and very few ideas and just, I mean, I'm not going to hire the person from Harvard.
No, you want someone who's... I mean, energy, bringing up energy, I mean, that's a good point. When people come in, you want someone that's going to light a fire under everyone's ass.
Exactly.
You know? And what do you think of a part of his email is having a backup plan. What do you think of that for, you know, as someone, you know, that's going, especially someone, if they're going to the arts and they have, you ever see, he wants to be a filmmaker, but he's also maybe a physician's assistant. Does it ever work if you're kind of halfway through the door?
And this is the thing. Anything works. Not to get crude, but I mean, there's a guy out there in the world somewhere who fucked a chicken and then was hit by a boulder and killed. You know, everything in the world has happened.
Yeah.
So it's like, so not to get crude, but the
I can't believe you mentioned my cousin. That just happened to him. It's unbelievable.
There you go.
Such a weird...
Every single example is out there. Mm. There's nothing that hasn't happened. Yes, there's things that happen more. This is what happens more. How I graduated from college, I went on interviews, I got a job in my major, and then I continued on until I died. Yeah, that's the most common.
Yeah.
But there's other things that happen, and that's the way it is. I mean, I remember interviewing Andy Ackerman, who's very, very low-key. He is an executive producer, but also probably one of the top television sitcom directors in history. Probably it's him and Jim Burrows.
Mm.
And he was saying how he became an editor and sort of even lied about how he could get this job as an editor, and then he got the job, and the woman was considerate enough to know that he lied just to get the job, and she helped him get through it and take some training.
Mm.
And at 24 years old, he won an Emmy for editing for WKRP in Cincinnati.
Wow.
And so he's at the top of his game. He can get any job as an editor he wants. And in the middle of that, he says, you know what? I really want to direct.
Hmm.
And so it's like everything has happened.
Yeah.
Everybody's done everything. It's just the way it looked. Whoopi Goldberg won an Academy Award and then became the middle square on the Hollywood Squares.
Yeah.
Okay.
All...
I mean, what? Where do you? Everything has gone on. Greg Kinnear was the host of Talk Soup and then became an extraordinary actor.
Yeah.
Well, there's all things that you can point to that go on. There's writers. The writer, I'm sorry, the name escapes me, and I hate myself for this because I'm really good with this, but the woman who wrote Juno was dancing on a pole 2 years earlier in Vegas to make money, okay? Anything is possible.
What do you think is the same, you know, I agree with you. It doesn't matter, you know, what your past is or, you know, where you're sitting at. What do you think the constant is, though, for those people that became successful from, you know, anywhere? You know, what was the one thing that they had in common? Just, work ethic?
No, it's work ethic and the content.
Mm.
It's the content of whatever you do. If you're a young entrepreneur, it's the content of how you put your business forward and how you present your brand or whatever it is, whether you're a writer, an actor, or you open up a business. It's how you separate yourself from the rest of the pack. It just because comedy is my world, or the world I'm a part of, not my world, but if I were to ask your audience, how many comedians have you seen that 90% of their material, is just unbelievably original, like you've never even heard remotely even a similar premise from anybody before, and they're not doing like, you know, shit and fucking jokes. They have something like you can't even believe when you hear it that you've never heard it before, never heard the concept before. And maybe your audience might say there's 10, maybe 15 comedians out there that they would say that about, because they even know, even your audience or any audience knows, they can see a comedian that makes them laugh.
Yeah.
But they'll know if the material's like, okay, I know I'm laughing at this bit about the, you know, relationships and men and women and how they sleep together in the different positions. I guess I'm laughing at this, but I also know that I've heard bits on this kind of stuff throughout my life. So if there's only 10 to 20 people in comedy that are really doing the right thing, that should let you know what level you need to be at in anything. Or if you look at sitcoms or half hours.
Yeah.
Well, what are the half hours that move people? What are the ones that stay on the air? Why do they stay on the air? We all know that there are sitcoms like Two and a Half Men, which are the highest rated sitcom in the world right now. And I know that even the executive producers of the show, and Ashton Kutcher or Chuck Lorre or Eric Tannenbaum is the producer, I know that they know that a lot of the material in the show is blue and is disguised blue humor. And it's sort of like how Three's Company used to be in those days, only this is an updated modern way of doing things. But I know they know. I know they know that the material on their show isn't the level of, let's say, Arrested Development or Curb Your Enthusiasm. They're not. These people are very smart people, but they're delivering a product that the network wants them to deliver, which is a mainstream product.
Yeah,
that's going to appeal to everybody. And that's why when you watch a show like Louie, and I talk about this a lot, like the scene in the last episode, Fat Girl. If you're a creator or a writer and you're a filmmaker and you tell me that you can't do it, you can't make a short, you can't do whatever, just watch on YouTube the 7-minute and 30-second version of Fat Girl, the scene where he's walking down the water with the girl. It's one camera, one take. Now, granted, they might have done 12 takes. Again, with my philosophy that you fail 11 times and all you need is one. But the fact is, one camera, one take, doesn't look like he's wearing any makeup, and it's brilliant, and anyone could write that, but that's the kind of thing you should aspire to write. Funny, socially relevant, and that blows people away. Now, I've been watching television for many, many years. Unbelievably, I've never seen a scene between a man and a woman talking about the concept of what it's like to be an overweight woman, and when a guy says, you're not fat, to a fat woman, that's the biggest insult that they could ever say. Know these things. I never heard anything like that. Now, granted, it seems like you would have heard it before, but you haven't. And that's why his show is very relevant. Now, it doesn't get the ratings of Two and a Half Men because, again, it's not mainstream. It's just cutting edge, edgy, and that's the way it is. But you respect what you see and what it is. Look, I say this all the time, and I just want to say this one point. And
go
and
for
probably,
it, please.
Probably Tina Fey would jump over my desk and strangle me, but I've said this a number of times. There are shows that are amazing, like the 30 Rock. I love all the characters. I love everything about it. Every single character is like a fucking home run. Every time they open their mouth, total devastation. But sometimes when you write something, you have to look at the familiarity of what the world is familiar with, and there's only so many things you can do. And when you look at 30 Rock, the foundation of 30 Rock is the foundation of one of the greatest shows in the history of television, the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah.
Whereas, Tracy Morgan is basically Ted Knight. Mary Tyler Moore is Tina Fey. And Lou Grant is Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
But it's just a different kind of vibe. It's a feel. And no one would ever watch Mary Tyler Moore and 30 Rock and think, wow, this is the same show, because it's not. But the point is, sometimes you can take a foundation, like if you're a writer and you're writing a romantic comedy. Well, obviously, every single romantic comedy, I don't care if it's the greatest one or the shittiest one, within 15 minutes, you know who the guy is going to be with. You know there's going to be a problem. You know he's got to figure out how to get her back. And yes, there are examples where things are done differently. In The Breakup, Vince Vaughn adamantly made them keep it to where at the end of the movie they didn't get back together. And that's probably the reason why the movie did $80 million and not $250 million.
Yeah.
But the fact is, from art, you know what's going to happen in every romantic comedy. It's just, everybody does, but they still go.
Yeah.
It's just a different formula.
Well, it sounds like, you know, to me, the message is that they're just nailing a trope that's out there for, you know, there are themes and there are stories that are, serve the test of time. But you can nail it for your specific thing. You can nail it for your timing and your age group, or, you know, like Two and a Half Men and Louie, two different shows that are nailing it for two different types of audiences. Would you say that's kind of why they're both successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, look, it's the characters are unique, the writing is phenomenal, and it's not a mainstream, it doesn't feel as mainstream as it should, but that's not the intention of it. The intention of it is to just be a slice of real life and the craziness of 30 Rock, which isn't really real life.
It's a cartoon.
It's an incredible world that you can't believe, but it's true. And I've been inside that sausage factory, not every day, 8 hours a day, but I've been there. You know, I've been in the writers' rooms. I've been at the pitch meeting for the hosts. I've had cast members on Saturday Night Live, and it's just an amazing look. Lorne Michaels is a genius. He may never say that he's a genius. If he were sitting here, he may never admit that he's a genius, but the guy's had a show on the air for 40 years.
Yeah.
I mean, who's had a show on for 40 years? I can't even get one show on for 4 years. Well, maybe Last Comic Standing, but, you know, but the point being is that people are trying to get a show on for 4 years, and 99.9% of them are failing.
Yeah.
This guy's had a show on for 40 years, and guess what? His first show. It's his first try.
Yeah, just...
And it was on for 40 years.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, but he peeps with... But also, that show changes with the times. You know, they keep refreshing itself. You know,
it certainly does.
It's let's do Barry Katz. I'm so happy you're coming on. Let's do one more email. This is more of a TFM email that we've taken in the past. You're up for that?
I'm up for anything you want.
Let's do it. So Barry Katz, industry standard. Go check out his podcast. Awesome. Giving us some real jewels today. Keep sending these emails, tfmpodcast@gmail.com. Every Tuesday, keep telling your friends, spreading the word. We love the new listeners. This one's called Don't Laugh, It's Not Funny. Jay Frat. All right, dude, I'm in a shithole of a situation. We all have Tinder, right? You know of Tinder, Barry?
I've never been on a dating website. I was always nervous about it because my photo would be up there. And Todd Barry, I think, is the guy, has a great line. I believe it's Todd Barry, great comedian. He says, "I'm done with these social dating websites. From now on, I have a new rule. If you're a woman and you send me your picture, you have to be holding today's newspaper."
I think I've heard that. I know that. Well, this is one of those Tinder. You have a one to four pictures of a girl. You swipe it left, that means you don't like her. You swipe it right, that means you do like her. If she swipes you right, now you're a match and you can talk. The game is
now
changed.
Do you know when somebody doesn't want you and they swipe you the other way?
You never really hear that someone doesn't want you, but the longer that you don't get a match with that person, the more likely it is that they said no to you. So
Tinder is, I don't know if it's changed in the past year, but I had thought that that was just something where it was more immediate gratification, where men and women just wanted to sleep with each other that night. Has it changed?
Well, I think I think it's changed because so many people are on it. So really, just like you said with business, anything can happen. You know, marriages happen.
You know, anything can happen. No, but anything can happen with a woman. You know, a woman, all she has to do in a nightclub is walk up to a guy and say two words.
Let's fuck.
Go.
Yeah.
And then it's over. A guy goes up to a girl and says, let's go. And she's like, go what?
Yes. Well, that's the thing with Tinder. You can get in a situation where you have a let's go. But I would assume that most, you know, there's a lot of girls on there that are looking for, you know, maybe a real date. And this guy says he matched with a MILF and they hit it off. She was cool and shit. Then we started Snapchat sexting and she got a screenshot of my dick. Oh, no. No face, but nonetheless, a pic of my dick. I really wouldn't give a shit normally. Tons of bitches have pics of my dick. Oh, this guy's spreading it around. No big deal. But there's the plot twist. Turns out she's a transsexual and is fucking crazy. Oh, man. I freaked out when, he puts in quotes, she told me this and said if I don't let her, he puts in quotes again, her, blow me, she's going to put my dick on Facebook and all the conversations we've had. I really want nothing to do with this psycho bitch, but I'm very confident she will go to every extent to make my life a living hell. What the fuck do I do? I'm kidding about the subject. Feel free to laugh and carry on. It's a fucking podcast and dudes being dudes. Thanks all. Help. Appreciate. Hopefully this bitch doesn't ruin my life. Barry, any advice?
I'm glad to see this is a diehard entertainment entrepreneurial podcast.
Well, listen.
Well, this is my advice for the person. First of all.
Okay.
How does anybody know that it's his penis?
Yeah.
How many people have seen his penis? Secondly, I wanted to just say the second thing here.
Okay.
Who cares?
Oh.
Like,
okay.
Why? How? Thirdly, how did she get the picture of your penis?
Well, this. It sounds like he sent it over Snapchat, and then she took a screenshot.
So. We're all in control of our own destiny. This
yes.
is a great metaphor for everything in business and life.
Perfect. I love
it's
that.
It's like we control everything. Yes, we walk down the street, and yes, a jet engine can fall from the sky and hit us and kill us.
Yes.
But the fact is, for the most part, we control everything.
Mm.
We control every situation. And in relationships and dating and everything else, it's the same way. It's like you know what you want. You can figure it out. If you want to get a job, you can get a job. If you want to go out with that girl who doesn't want to go out with you, you can figure it out. If you're a woman who can't get this guy to give you the time of day, you can figure it out. You always can figure it out and make it happen. And this is, you know, this guy putting pictures of himself out there. What does that say about somebody? What
yeah.
does that say about anybody? If you're at a bar, okay?
Mm.
If you're at a bar and you're a girl or a guy and you're meeting somebody for the first time and they expose themselves to you at the bar, what does that say?
Quite a first
does
date.
Does that say to you that, hey, wow, this is the first time this person's ever done.
Yeah, no,
it says to you, this is a pattern that they do to get attention. And this guy that yes, it's possible it's the first time he ever put a picture of his penis.
This is a long-standing thing.
I personally don't know, I'm not in this world, but to me, like, I don't know what putting a picture of a penis does for you. I don't know if that's, I don't know if women look at pictures of penises and say, well, that's a particularly nice penis. I want to go out with that guy. I like the circumference. I like the girth. I like the fact that there's no vein going down the circumference of it. I think
yeah.
this is a guy that I want to be with. This is like the major thing I told you with the college
yeah.
major or whatever. It's like, who can, you know, there's women, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm just going to share this with your audience.
Please.
Okay? I'm going to give it up here. So I'm a guy who's a separated. I've been separated for 2 years, and I'm, when I look and I meet people who are your audience's age, men and women, I feel like they're peer, but then I realize, holy shit, you know, I could be their father, but I don't feel like their father.
Yes.
Men and women. And then I think when I'm out there in the world in this dating scheme of things or whatever it is that people call it.
Totally.
If I were to look at where I was and all the qualifications on my list as a person and what a woman was looking for, I'd start looking for a firearm. It's like because what woman is going to say, let me see, I want a guy who's going through a divorce, who's got custody of his two children, who's a workaholic, who's 55 years old. You know, sign me up for that fucking guy.
What's her problem?
So if I were to look at all these things, man, if I were to take a picture of my penis, my God, I'd definitely just quit life in general. But the point being is that I think women, any woman who's worth anything and who you meet as a guy who's really special, you have to know that they've been with everybody. And I'm not saying that she's a whore. Please know, I'm saying that she's been with great people.
Mm.
So you have to know that she's been with a Wall Street guy who's got the great suit. You have to know that she's been with the musician who wrote a song for her, who brought her to the club. You have to know that she's been with the basketball player who's African-American, who's hung like a buffalo. You know that she's been with the Italian guy direct from Italy who wooed her. She's been with everybody, but she chooses now to hang with you.
Yes. Well,
why is she hanging with you? She's hanging with you because there's something about you that's special. And I think this ties into career and everything like that, if I could just keep going for a second.
Please do.
So if you're a sports fan, let's just say the New England Patriots are the number one team in the NFL, okay? And they might be number one in total offense, but they might be number three in defense, number two in pass receptions, number seven in special teams, number one in kickoff returns. But overall, they're number one. They might not have every quality or do everything right all across the board. I don't know if there's ever been a football team or a sports team that's been number one in every category. But they're at the top of their game, and that's why you want to be with them. That's why you want to root for them. And it's the same in relationships. You can't be everything. You might be the guy who is able to, who knows, you know, do it to your girl or guy all night long, but you might not have the heart or the love that they're looking for.
Mm.
You might be this person who loves them dearly and you make them feel safe, but you're not as, I don't know, as high a drive as somebody else. So the whole thing is that just when you're finding these people or the right job or anything, it's about that thing where you realize that you're good enough.
Mm.
And this guy who sends a photo of his penis, that kind of indicates to me that in one way, it indicates to me that he's confident.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to send a picture of my penis because I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
And that's not going to work for me. Jews and penis photos go together like the words Kmart quality. It's not going to happen.
Not going down.
So, but the fact is he's confident.
I like to call myself a strong medium.
But that's great. Lenny Clark used to have this great joke. He said, listen, I'm Irish, Catholic, you know, I'm not knocking walls down with this thing, but I'm not hurting the national average either. So, but the point being is confident because he took the picture.
Yes.
But he's confident in the wrong ways and to channel that in different areas, because anytime you send a picture of yourself like that, I don't think there's anyone in the world that says, wow, great character.
Yeah.
Great move.
It's called being cocksure.
Smart. That's the, you know, what relationship is going to start and finish and go the distance based on a picture of your cash and prizes, as Dane Cook would say.
It sounds like he's trying to get, you know, a very specific type of relationship, and real, you got to vet out these people you're sending this to. I mean, send it to a tranny.
You know, it's also fascinating. It's the My Private, you know, remember that movie, I think it was My Own Private Idaho with River Phoenix. And one of the things you learn about this that you actually kind of, I think you alluded to in that, his words, he said that she was going to send it out on Facebook if he didn't allow her to satisfy him, correct?
Yes, this is the issue.
This is the fascinating thing about that world, that it's really fascinating. And it's like the desire, you would think, would be to receive.
Yes, you
but
would think
that
so.
World, but in that world, and if I remember my own Private Idaho as well, in that world, the goal is to give. That's what makes you feel the best.
It makes you feel a certain amount of power, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my advice to him is get ahead of the story. Look at like when, you know, Andy Pettit and Roger Clemens, you know, how do you look at them differently now? Andy Pettit was like, listen, here's what happened. I'm guilty of this. Don't worry, you know, and no one thinks of him as a steroid user. Roger Clemens went down kicking and screaming, and then when it came out, you know, the lie made him look worse than the actual penalty. So, I mean, if I'm this guy, you tell anyone that's listening, listen, I got myself fucked over with this tranny, and she has a picture of my dick by accident, and then you let people know this could happen, the people that are most important, and then when it happens, you just say, you know, just act like, you know, nothing happened at all. You know, just kind of like what you were saying before, who cares? Listen, I fucked up. Let's try and get past this. Also, cut off all communication with her. That's my thing. Right, Barry?
I can't agree with you more.
Barry Katz, thank you so much for coming on. I really do appreciate it. I think this is great for the listenership. They're going to be really excited to get all this great advice. I really do appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you so much. I must say, I've done a lot of podcasts, and clearly none of them have ended this way.
No.
So you have lowered my expectations for my next podcast I do, and I'm very grateful. And thanks for telling your guests to subscribe to Industry Standard and to listen to it. It's free, and I guarantee you, as corny as it sounds, it will change your life. Not me, maybe necessarily, but the people on, and it'll really, really help you. That's all I want to do.
I completely agree with that, Barry. There's so many life bits in there and little things, you know, advice things that you get out of that podcast. So everyone should go check out Industry Standard and subscribe and tell friends about it. Is there a favorite episode of yours that, you know, people should go check out first, or do you have one that sticks out to you?
Well, the thing is, if you're a different person in the industry or any entrepreneurial setting, there's things that will mean things to you more. Like, for instance, if you're an actor and you want to be an actor, I would listen to a podcast, let's say, with Larry Moss, who's DiCaprio and Helen Hunt and Hilary Swank's acting coach, or a casting director like Julie Ashton, or the guy who cast all of Seinfeld, Mark Hirschfeld, or the casting directors from ABC, Donna Rosenstein and Gene Blythe. But if you're a reality, you want to be a reality producer, there's Brandt and Vidic. If you want to write and create children's television, there's the guy who created Saved by the Bell on Saturday morning television, Peter Engel. If you want to be a network executive, I've had presidents of HBO, Starz, Comedy Central, Spike, TV Land, you know, all these different networks, Lifetime, the WB, and you can listen to their stories as well, which are incredible. Or if you're a, let's say you're somebody living in a really tough neighborhood and you're coming into your college from that tough neighborhood, people like Reggie Hudlin, who was the producer of Django Unchained and was the president of BET, grew up in East St. Louis, and he, you know, got out of the bad neighborhood and bad area and moved forward and did great things. Byron Allen was the youngest person ever to do The Tonight Show. Now he's one of the biggest entrepreneurs in the business. He has 34 television shows on the air. And so it's like all these stories are there. Kara Leifer, in her professional life, she's a writer and comedian and actor. In her professional life, she tried out for The Tonight Show 21 times and was turned down 21 times. On her 22nd try, she got The Tonight Show. In her personal life, she turns 40. She decides that, hey, you know what, I think I want to see what it's like on the other side, and go out with women.
Really?
And then that night she goes to an event and she meets the woman she's been with for the past 12 years, and they have a child. So it's like, it's so weird. Like, sometimes these stories, like, your professional life cannot be going the way you want it to, and it takes a long time, and your personal life, it can go perfectly right away, but then other times, it's vice versa. It's,
yeah.
There's a lot of lessons. The president of HBO and now Starz was homeless. He was living in a 99-seat theater. Dr. Phil, who I interviewed, was homeless, living in a car with his father. Wow. There's just so many amazing stories. Andrew Panay, who's a producer of Wedding Crashers and Earth to Echo, he was an intern at Tapestry Films, and he just got there before everybody else left, after everybody else left, and worked harder than all the other interns, and finally got a job, and just decided to create some concepts, and after Wedding Crashers, the rest was history. There's so many stories like that. I'm sorry I'm rambling, but I think this is important.
No, it's very.
The president of Viacom, Doug Herzog, my first podcast ever, he oversees like 7 networks. He was walking through the hallways one day, and a young person in a cubicle stopped him and said, "Doug, I want to show you something." I don't even think he knew her name. And he goes into the conference room. She pops in the VHS tape. It's 2 minutes long. It's the video Christmas card of South Park that they created. South Park guys, Matt and Trey, created a video Christmas card that was 2 minutes long.
And
he said, "Play it again." She played it again. It was done. He said, "Play it again." And after it was over, he said, "Get those guys in here. Let's do a deal with them." $1 billion later,
yeah.
that person, Debbie Liebling, never had to worry about any kind of gig. Consequently, there was a guy who was working in a cubicle at Comedy Central for 3 years. He was like, the guy was literally going nowhere. And he felt like he was a shitty assistant. He really felt like he was going nowhere. And he needed to figure out what to do to get to the next level. But he wasn't doing it. He just couldn't get it done. And one night he was scheduled to go out on a date, I believe, and the date canceled at like the last minute. And he's like, "God, this is great. I can't even get in the action." So he stayed back, and he started just looking through the internet again, trying to find something that would move somebody, something that would do something, because he just was going nowhere. And so this young executive, his name's Walter Newman, found a sketch and another sketch online that these guys had made, and he laughed hard. And he made a choice. He decided, look, I'm not going to make a copy of this and just put it on my boss's desk. I'm going to make 10 copies of this and put a note on it and put it on every executive's desk, including Doug Herzog's desk, all across the country. That show, Workaholics.
Huh.
I can guarantee that guy wasn't in a cubicle much longer.
No,
now he's the president of development at Adult Swim. So it's just everybody has a story, and it's pretty amazing how they get to where they're going to go and how they've gotten there, and it's just an incredible thing. You know, if you're a fan of comedy or not comedy, it's just, there's so many stories, and
yeah.
it's most of it involves adversity.
It's unbelievable, and everyone's is just. It's just very cool to hear them come up through, you know, just, those are just pieces of stories that you hear every week, and it's great. You got to go check it out. Industry Standard with the Barry Katz. Barry, thank you so much for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, my man. This was great. I really enjoyed it. So fun. Thank you.
Awesome.